Welcome to the MIDS podcast.
Welcome to the MIDS podcast. This is episode one, and you may or may not know from possibly hearing a teaser trailer that there is a lot of history in this podcast, even though you're at episode one. Krista, why don't you let the folks know a little bit about what this podcast is about and how we got here.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm Krista. In case you didn't know, my co-host is David, which you're going to hear from us quite often throughout our pod, obviously, because it's ours. This has been, I don't even know how many years in the making.
This started in actually at the height of the COVID pandemic.
So 2020. Yeah. So we started then. We recorded a lot of episodes. And life got in the way. We both went through a lot of changes in life. I think the big one was moving, changing our locations from a central location to both the East and West Coast, which is really cool. And I think it's going to provide like a really unique perspective for each of us when coming here every few weeks to talk about television. But really the premise is that we're just going to kind of drop into the middle of a show and in the middle. And we're just gonna watch an episode and talk about it. So if you're ever interested in providing us some show recommendations, we will always take them, or just general notes, send them to us. Right now our email is midspodcast@gmail.com, so feel free to shoot us an email.
I anticipate that not only is that our email right now, but I would guess that's going to be our email for the run of this show.
I agree. It's also, we are on Instagram. So please make sure to give us a follow there if you haven't already.
What is our handle?
Our handle on Instagram is at MIDS Podcast. You guys guessed it. If you have been paying attention, I'm just curious. I posted a few days ago on the Instagram that we were going to be launching the first episode and that it was going to be a medical drama.
Okay.
And I threw up some options for everyone to choose from, what we're going to be watching first. David, I'm going to do a little drum roll over here. Do you want to tell the fans what we are watching?
Of the things to be, the pains that are withheld for me, I realize and I can see.
That is the MASH theme song. And Krista, we are going to watch that, but not today.
But not today.
Today we are.
I live, laugh, love it.
Today we are talking about the medical drama that aired on NBC.
ER.
And what does that stand for, you think?
Hopefully, I feel like we all know what it stands for, because it's a place no one wants to go.
Well, sometimes you really want to go there,
Well, that's true. That's true. I guess, and maybe positive things come. Babies sometimes are born here.
I mean, but a lot of lives are saved in the ER. Were any?
You don't want to have to be in a space where your life has to be saved, So ER, emergency room.
Yes, that is one. That was my first question, and you answered it. ER stands for emergency room, and this isn't a question so much as a statement. A lot of this episode didn't take place in an emergency room. It took place in a what kind of room?
I have that in my notes. An examination room? ER.
That's true. Maybe ER that's
for,
what,
a little known facts.
I bet, I examination. Think that's right. Examination room.
No. The courtroom.
The courtroom. And this episode is called Quo Vadis.
Quo Vadis.
Which is probably a legal term because it's in Latin.
Do we know what it stands for in Latin? Or should
I think
Google
it stands
that?
For like what? What? Truth or something. That's my guess.
It stands for... There's also a film by the same name.
Oh.
Where are you going? Where are you going today, listener? I hope you're listening in the car. Hope it's a great morning and the sun is shining and you're listening to the MIDS podcast.
Yeah, I hope something different. I hope you're in a park.
I live for that. So, if you're familiar with ER, actually, David, before I start, what is your kind of experience with ER up until this point?
So I'll talk about my personal experience room, which is the room in my mind where I think of experiences that I've had. And one of those experiences, several of those experiences were as a young man, a real young man, probably 9, 10, definitely 11, walking through the living room, walking to my mother's room to bother her, and she's watching a program full of white coats, doctors, and they're going through it. All right? I remember the theme music that was not what you heard earlier, but I remember... So I didn't have that one ready to go. That might have been good, but, you know, this is...
We'll insert the MIDS podcast. A little clip of it at some point.
I don't know. But I will say about
David,
that...
can I say...
Yes.
I'm just going to say that the same experience for me, except it wasn't in the living room. It's for whatever reason, my mom's bedroom.
Do you think your mom didn't want you to see ER?
I think it was because it was on late at night. She was in bed watching it.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? I actually feel like most of the times that I saw this show was probably in my mom's room. I mean, as well. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Maybe my sister or other folks wanted to watch other stuff in the living room, or maybe it was very late for us.
I have all the same memories about it. Like that same frame point as well of just like my mom's watching it. I know I'm not supposed to watch it, but I recognize a lot of it. I feel like I've watched it. That's what I felt like this whole episode was like. I've seen this before. I can plop in. Like, it was very easy for me to catch on. But just, yeah, it felt really familiar. I couldn't remember exactly where it took place, but I remember there was a lot of snowy, slushy episodes.
When you were talking about where it takes place, I'm like, it takes place in an ER, an examination room.
Yeah, I just remember also like the really common, I don't know, not belief, common knowledge that George Clooney was on it. But I don't ever remember seeing George Clooney on it.
I'm glad you brought it up, because our listeners probably don't know this, but there is a significant age gap between the hosts of this podcast. So I would guess Clooney probably left in 1995, which was maybe a few years after you were born, because I can no longer,
yes.
This may not make it into the podcast, but I can no longer. Okay. So Krista, that's the thing. You may not remember.
Don't know us personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
there's a little bit of an age difference between David and I. He will tend to
no
point out that it feels like a much larger age difference than it is. Usually at least once per episode.
No, that's
maybe
not
twice.
Well, here's the thing, listener. You may hear that in old episodes. How can we have old episodes if this is the first episode? Well,
that's true.
I don't know if this came up earlier, but we recorded a bunch of these episodes during the quarantine, beyond that, after we move, just to stay in touch, just to make sure that we can talk to each other about a random TV show. Every once in a while, we recorded like 20 episodes. So in between weeks or in between sessions, I don't know how long we're going to do it, but in between releases of new episodes, we're going to also release old episodes, except they're just old to us. They're not old to you.
They're
unless
new to you.
Unless you're one of the 3 or 4 people that we played these for to get feedback on.
Yeah.
And even to some of those people, it'll be
true.
Your first time hearing it. So we're very excited for that.
So that
to say is, Krista, I think the show, when did it premiere? 91? Is that right?
I have ER pulled up.
I just meant to say that you might have been too young to see the Clooney episodes when they aired, because I was.
Yeah, I think I was.
I also didn't.
I think at that point I was too young to have the memories forming of it.
Exactly. Yeah, I think I remember seeing that he was on ER after I saw him in Batman and Robin, which was probably a few years after he left.
It aired from September of 1994 to April of 2009.
Damn, 2009
episodes, 15 seasons. Yeah, it was on for a while.
Wow. I think The West Wing went off the air in like 2007, 2008. And John Wells is a co-creator of both of those shows. So interesting.
Usually I'll just share two really quickly. Usually we're going to just break down the episode and go through the plot as you would watch it. But because ER has so many characters, I think today we're going to kind of go by storyline, and we'll still have conversations about the characters, but this episode really doesn't have a lot of overlap of doctors in like multiple storylines. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go kind of chronologically in how storylines are presented in this episode. But the first kind of storyline we're going to chat about is, David kind of hinted at it earlier, isn't actually not in the emergency room at all. It's in the courtroom, because we have a little custody battle going on.
We have a little, but did you get the sense that it was a custody battle in the first scene?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I think I did too. So I'll just say, besides an age gap, in this particular instance, there was a when we watched it gap. I watched this a few days ago, so I took lots of notes. Yeah. In the order in which they appear, so I may have to flip around. But Krista did watch it today, so her memory is going to be so fresh. So fresh.
Fresh.
Speaking of fresh, have you heard... No. We don't have sponsors yet.
HelloFresh.
No, no free advertisement. That could be. Have been a Subway ad, maybe, if we want sponsorship from a company that's about to be acquired by another sandwich company, which is a antitrust violation, probably. But nonetheless, it's Jimmy John's. I think they're trying to buy Subway.
Interesting. Did not hear that, but I'm clearly out of the news.
Dr. Benton. Dr. Peter Benton, who I did recognize just from having seen the show before.
Did you recognize this little move he does in the credits?
Yeah,
that was so vivid to me. But anyway, guys,
yeah, that's actually,
it's a little
Well, yeah, they couldn't see any of that, so when I was nodding my head,
no, it's cool. Maybe I'll put a clip of it on Instagram if I remember.
Oh, good idea. Yeah, that's little, as like, iconic just, to me.
There's got
to
be like a little GIF. What's it called? Yeah, thank you. A GIF of it. I'll post that on Instagram. But so Dr. Benton talking to his son, who's in daycare.
Is he his son? I mean,
that's his son. Oh,
because okay, we'll just go into that.
So Peter Benton talking to his son, actually signing with his son. His son is deaf.
He's deaf,
which was really cool. That was just like immediately part of the show. Just like normal stuff. I would say his son's like 3 or 4 years old, and just talking about how he's gonna be home for bedtime or whatever. And then quickly this scene ends, and really the next scene is Peter Benton getting ready for court with his lawyer. Side note, lawyer's like little sidekick right there. Is that?
That was Keegan-Michael Key. That was not only Keegan-Michael Key.
Okay, I wrote that down.
I looked it up after.
Because he didn't speak.
He did. He had like one line, but I was like, whoa, is that him? And then I was like, what year is this? It was 2001 in which this aired. And I'll mention, this was his very first TV credit. He didn't even have Mad TV at this point or any of his other credits.
Wow.
So that was a very young Keegan-Michael Key. And I'll point out later, we get a TV appearance from an even younger actor who went on to have a lot of television success. And we will get to that later. But for now, we're talking... Okay. Dr. Peter Benton. We're talking his son, whose name was?
Reese.
We are talking about an instance in which
the lawyer makes him change his tie. because it was too flashy.
It was too flashy. And I just want to,
do you think that was valid? Do you think the tie was too flashy?
I think if you're going to court, to family court, it doesn't hurt to have a tie that's a little flashy.
I agree. It gives you some character. Nonetheless, they switch ties. So the first scene is Roger.
Yes.
The stepfather. In court, we have, we quickly learn that it's not a custody battle between Benton and the child's mother. It's with Benton and the child's stepfather. We do learn at some point that the mother of the child in question actually died in like a previous episode a few months ago. So that's why they're in custody. So we have stepfather Roger on the stand, first seen in the courtroom, and he is basically just talking about how Benton has to have everyone help him with this child. But Roger doesn't, because Roger has a flexible job and Roger loves to hang out with him. And it is peak cliche custody battle television.
Yeah, they're trying to spin, and you have to suspend your disbelief because the judge is looking at this like, these are some good points. But the points are, right, he has to work late sometimes. He has to get
because
called
he's a
in.
Doctor in an emergency
he's
room.
A doctor in an emergency room. I feel like people would be like, you know, yeah, maybe that's sense. Not ideal for a young person, but probably making pretty good money, and they're probably in circles in which they can afford childcare, which never comes up really, because they do talk about Benton leaving his son with other people, and that's like a little bit of an issue.
Which brings us to the second person that is on the stand in the show, testifying, which is Benton's girlfriend and also another doctor, Cleo.
I think that's right.
Finch,
the first thing they ask her, which is usually not a question, but it's to state your name, which would have been really helpful for us, given we've
David,
not
this
really...
is ER and not CR.
What's CR?
Courtroom.
Fair. That being said, I would have liked to have known all of the characters' names, but I know a few.
I got them.
The first question they ask her, if I recall correctly, IIRC, is basically, what are your intentions with Dr. Benton? You know, how long have you been dating? Or are you still going to be dating him in, you know, however much time? Which I guess is to establish the stability of care for Reese, but...
Yeah, that's what I said. I said literally stability at home is being questioned. Also, there's an incident in the past where Reese hurt himself under her supervision.
Oh, yes. Under her supervision. She says she looked away
children,
for a second. You personally don't have children?
I don't have any children yet.
I theoretically don't have children.
So if you've ever watched a child, they get hurt sometimes. Whether you're watching them or not. Whether you're holding them or not. That's a child, right? You're going to have some bumps and bruises along the way. So definitely, again, cliche custody battle. Like, oh, you weren't watching him, so he got hurt. No, that's just not real life. But it's definitely the way this is going.
Shout out to the folks at home. If you're familiar with the term MBWA, manage, I may have gotten that acronym wrong. But listen to this. It stands for manage while walking around. And if you know what I'm talking about, send me an emoji that will make sense. If you know about manage while walking around or manage by walking around, one of those two things, put an emoji under this link that you think will make sense to me, because it'll be so good. It'll be so good. And this is a real testament. This will be a testament to the East Coast, West Coast split a little bit.
All right. And then the last person to, we take a little break in the courtroom. We re-meet Benton's sister, Jackie, who is pissed off about what's going on. She's fiery. I love her. She's in something else that I can't think of off the top of my head. That I've watched many times. But she's upset that Roger is coming after her nephew. And then that leads
to that's Candy. I'm sorry, real quick. Yeah. I do have this in my notes. That was Candy Alexander. She's a wonderful actress. She's been in quite a few things. And I have in my notes that she was in. Candy Alexander, of course, was in ER. She was in What's Love Got to Do with It. She was also in The Corner, the HBO series, which is a precursor to The Wire. And Krista, she was in
CSI Miami.
CSI Miami. Yep. Also in the show Tremé, which is probably the first thing that I really remember her in. But she's awesome. She's Benton's sister, and she is mad.
Which makes sense. And Benton goes on the stand and is being questioned about, you know, his capability to raise his son. And
his fitness really is as a father.
Fitness as a father. And it's really just, it's really being directed at Jackie because she's helping out and her sanity. And it sounds like Jackie's had probably a rough few years with specifically a son dying who was involved in some gang activity. So that's brought up. And that's really it for the court scene. Like, that's where the custody battle, like, saga ends for this episode. Obviously, I'm sure not in the show. But that's what we've got there. So, David, any other thoughts on this storyline?
Every sort of got you question that they asked him all sort of resulted in, I mean, in the show and in objection. Which the judge often just let through. But every single one, the answer to that is, yeah, he's an ER doctor, and that's fine. It was really silly. But, I mean, for folks who've been in the family court system, maybe that is the case. I mean, you know, people are really clawing and scratching and fighting dirty and getting everything you can. Yeah, maybe that is the case. My heart goes out to folks who have to put up with that if it really is that bad, and I imagine it's not fun. So thank you, Krista, for taking us through that first storyline with Dr. Peter Benton. Did you get the sense that he's one of the main character? I know it's an ensemble.
Definitely one of the top,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, that was very clear to me. For folks at home, you probably know if you've looked at the show notes, but this is episode 8? No, this is episode 9 of season 8.
I believe it's season 8, episode 9.
Yeah, season 8, episode 9. So we truly are on this one in the middle of the show. So we had very little context. So that's what we were able to gather immediately, though.
Yeah, second storyline, kind of about family as well, is about a blonde lady named Nicole, which I'm actually really not going to spend much time on this storyline because although it does take up a lot of this episode, I think there are storylines that are, like, way more important in this episode that I want to talk about. So for the sake of time, I don't want to get too down and dirty with this one. But the beginning of this episode, you hear some chatter about a nurse or somebody at the hospital who was potentially stealing. Had some malpractice or some, like, hand in the death of some older folks. We don't really get a sense of, like, exactly who she is, but it's a woman who has a relationship with Dr. Luka Kovac. I think that's how you pronounce his last name. In this episode, she's claiming she's pregnant with his baby. And it doesn't seem like they have a relationship. It seems like it was maybe, like, a fling, but he cares about her
a lot.
You can tell Luka wears his heart on his sleeve. Like, you can just tell he's a very...
romantic.
Yeah, just like a very
passionate,
which I side note, I did look this up. He was brought in to replace Clooney. Like that was like the main goal.
So this was, they needed another heartthrob guy.
Right. So, and I think he plays it well. So he, you know, he lets Abby Lockhart, another mainstay in the show and in this episode, know that Nicole's pregnant. We can't really tell if her and Luka are together at this point or if they're just like interested, but you can tell that them talking about it is not like an ideal situation for them. And she is not happy about it. And she's very much like, hey, are you sure it's your child? Are you sure she's pregnant? Actually, Abby ends up talking to Nicole at some point. They have coffee in the episode. She kind of picks it like, hey, you should get an ultrasound. I can give you one right now. No big deal. Kind of questions how she knows she's pregnant. And basically is like, hey, like, I think you're lying because you've been lying before. This scene is followed up by Luca and Nicole having a conversation, and Nicole tells him like, hey, I'm gonna go to Montreal and help run a cafe there. And Luca's like, you know, he's clearly upset. It's his baby, you know, he like wants to have a role in his child's life. And you know, he's like, this is so interesting. He says, hey, like, I get off at 7, let's meet up after work, you know, whatever. And she goes, I'll call you in a few days. First of all, so 90s. Does that ever happen with people when someone's like, hey, let's
I'll call you in a few days.
Later. And then the other person's like, no, I'll just deal with it in a few days. Like, you know, and then.
What even is the circumstance for that? I mean, people had phones.
Right.
Why a few days? Oh, was she traveling?
Was
she going
to the drama?
Mm.
And then she says, you talked yourself into loving me, but this isn't real.
Did that resonate? Did that resonate with you? That line?
I thought it was. It didn't, but I thought it was intense.
I feel like that's something.
I was like, oh, damn.
Yeah, I feel like that's something that probably happens, one, of course, but probably that sort of accusation at the end of a relationship, or I don't know if accusation's the right word, but that judgment is probably made and cast without much forethought. You talked me into loving you. Like, I bet you people have just, that's come out of their mouth without them even really thinking about it at all. It just seems like good to say.
I mean, I think, so she says you talked yourself into loving me. And I think.
Sure. No,
I
well, not.
I feel like I've said that in other quotes. Like, I think there's been times in my life where I've been like, you don't love me. You love the idea of me. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm kidding too.
You love this idea. Like, you want to be in love, or you want to love. And sometimes
you like,
it's okay
sometimes
to
you
just
like the idea
like,
of being in a relationship, and it's like, yeah, I'll make it not, you know, I'll make it work, or this will take shape, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And then we find out.
Absolutely.
She's not pregnant, and I can't tell if she's lying there or not.
Yes, I wrote down in my notes. That's the liar's paradox, right? If someone says, like, right? Yeah, I lie about literally everything, including this. All right, so moving on to the third storyline that we want to highlight. Krista, what is the third storyline?
Early on in the show, in typical ER fashion, the doors swing open, boom, gunshot victim.
Yes.
GSW victim.
Yeah, I have that too. They
and
say
it's
GSW.
You have to say GSW, otherwise it's not real ER fashion. So we have a woman. I think she was killed in a robbery. This is like the second scene in the entire episode. Very quickly established that she is not going to make it and that she's brain dead. And while their, you know, doctors are discussing this as they were trying to, you know, perform life-saving measures, they find a donor card. So immediately, I already know where the storyline is going, which I was really interested to see how it ends. So they tell her husband, hey, you know, your wife's not going to make it, but she's a donor. And David, how does he react?
He's like pretty accommodating, I think, right? He's like, yeah, okay.
He's like shocked, but he's also like, I don't know, like, I don't know how I feel about it at first. Because I think he has a problem with like,
that, yeah.
The idea that they will keep her alive while they harvest the organs. Like,
I think
that's where his...
Oh, yeah. I think that's right. I think he also made some sort of reference to, like, can you try to, like, keep her alive?
Let her die naturally. Yeah.
Yeah, but...
No, he wants her to die naturally. And then
but
take
to
the
die
organs.
Naturally.
So she's an organ donor. And I wrote down here, like, her husband didn't even know. So it kind of makes... It brought this question up personally for me, which... I'm sure as this podcast goes on, I will share. I am in a relationship with a lovely man named Joe. Joe did not watch ER with me. He did. He was sleeping. But I thought to myself, I don't know if he's an organ donor or if that's his wishes. And I think that's something you need to talk about with your partner or, you know, your spouse, because it's a really important thing that obviously comes up too late sometimes. Are we having those are people having those conversations? I'm just curious. Maybe let us know in the comments on the Instagram post if you've talked about that, especially if you are an organ donor. Have you had that conversation? Like, because some people are, it's really important to them that that happens. And I can see why. So I don't know. Any thoughts on that, David?
Yeah. I mean, I think it may be worth a couple of distinctions here, because the way that I was initially thinking about it with do not resuscitate. Do not resuscitate is the one that people for sure need to talk about, because there is a lot of ambiguity there. They mentioned to him right off the bat that she was brain dead. I think they used like a term like experiencing brain death or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I noted too. But I thought that's the direction this show was going to go. Like, do you have a living trust? A will? You know, do you have a DNR order? But it didn't go that way. It went to the organ donor piece. And that one is less ambiguous, but there's still little ambiguity there as far as, are you going to try to keep her alive? Because I know some people are very concerned that if you get the organ donor, and for folks outside of the U.S., I'm not sure how it works elsewhere, but in the United States, this is a decision you make when you're getting a license, renewing a license, or an ID card. Maybe you're not really thinking about it that much. You kind of just want to get out of the Department of Motor Vehicles. You just put it or not, I don't know. Nonetheless, she had it on her license, and that's how they found it. So it wasn't really much of a conversation as far as do you want to donate her organs or not. It was more so, you know, there's no coming back from this. Right. So just how is it going to happen?
I think for me, if there's one thing I'm going to take away from this episode to like in my like everyday life, I think it's going to be having that conversation with more people around me. And also I think just a plug, I guess, because you kind of brought it up, is, you know, having a will and having like a trust or having the end of life arrangements like that figured out. I feel like it's something, at least in my family, that we've seen some really icky situations where things got a little messy because things weren't stamped out, or they were, but we couldn't find it, or, you know, whatever it is. That stuff is so important. And it's just something to talk about. Like, even if it's something informal, like for your family to know, like general wishes, you gotta have that stuff written down.
Written down.
And I will say, I'll shout out to, I don't know if this is common practice, but at one of my former positions, they actually, as like part of their professional development, financial planning, they had series where they would have that, you know, like a couple times a year, like the financial advisors come in. They did one on end of life planning and like having discussions on how to like get a will and stuff like that. So if anyone here is listening that works in like an HR department that's looking for some interesting professional development opportunities for staff, I suggest that, because it's really important and I think can be really well utilized for folks. So a little plug from life. But
did you make a will?
I didn't, but I did grab all the paperwork and I gave it to my parents, both my mom and my dad.
Oh, that's good. They have that.
And I don't think either of them did anything with it, but they both say that they should. And I will say, after that, I have had conversations with them both separately. My parents aren't together, about just generally like, hey, what would you want? Like, you know, even simply like, do you want to be buried or cremated? Like, that's a big decision. And I have a sense of what each of them want. And I know where their important paperwork is. So to get some of those things just going, I know where things are, and that's usually like half the battle. So, although it didn't materialize in an actual document, we're in a better spot than we were. So get those wills in.
When there's a will, there's a way. Folks, speaking of which, we are sponsored by, we're no one right now, but we are open. We are possibly open for business. And we're pretty discerning.
Yeah.
But even if you think we wouldn't accept your sponsorship, well, it's worth a try. So that email again is midspodcast@gmail.com. Folks, thank you for sending in
offers to sponsor.
I mean, you know what, though? In the nonprofit world, that is a thing.
Yeah.
You know about this?
You can put your favorite charities in there. Why not?
I mean, I could think of reasons why not, but...
Right. mean, no, but yeah, it's important to have that stuff written down. So back to the donor victim, which, by the way, I don't think we ever even hear her name, but her husband is just a little, I wouldn't say he's hesitant for her to have her organs donated. It's like hesitant for the process. So he ends up just like, you know, looking into a couple other procedures where they can like take her off life support. But like literally the second that she actually dies, they harvest, stuff like that.
Yes.
And in the end, that's what they do, is they take this riskier procedure. And Benton's, it comes circle. He's back there. He's back in the ER.
He's the head surgeon for this procedure.
ER, not ER room. That's
right. Well, maybe for the whole department, but at least for this procedure, we see him. I think even before they try this procedure, when they're first doing trauma care for her, I think he says, I gotta go. Someone's late. Someone takes over.
Yeah,
for
that was
him.
Like before. It was like at before he was like going to court. Yeah.
Yes. So he was upset, and he comes back at the end to do the procedure. And someone asks
and
him why
notes.
He's dressed up.
Oh, I didn't even
he's
write
like,
that down.
Yeah, I'm in court. I've been in court all day, and they're like, "Oh, for what?" And he's like, "Just don't worry about it. Forget it." So you get the sense that Dr. Benton's wears things a little close to the hospital spa.
And then they do the procedure, which they let the husband watch, which is wild.
That was insane.
That's not real, I hope.
When that other guy comes in and he's all like, when's she gonna croak? Stuff like that.
He was a little bit crass there. I did not like his vibes.
I think that's one of the through lines of this episode, is that they do talk about things in kind of a crass way, but the woman's husband was right there.
No, he literally walked into the room and was like, "Hey, I ordered liver an hour ago and I haven't gotten it yet," or something. Like it was weird. But in the end, they take her off life support. And she doesn't die. And that's actually how the episode ends.
Oh, yeah.
Is them kind of standing around and it ending with the heart monitor beeping, just like the normal beep. And they were like, "We're just going to wait it out." So very interesting. Real quickly, I got to grab a computer charger, which maybe we can get computer chargers to be the sponsor of this episode. Hold on.
Do company? BRB. Okay. I think, folks, for those at home, I think... your charger is typically the same company that makes your computer. I mean, and we're talking about laptops here. So, for instance, I have one from a company that has a four-letter name. We do no free ads here. And I would guess that the charger is made by that same company, because I've never come into a situation in which I could take the battery out of one laptop, put it in another if it's a different company, or even if it's a different just model, so make and model. But Krista is not only getting water, she is bringing her phone charger over, dropping things. I don't think she can hear me. I'm very curious about why the cable to that charger is so long, or is so, not long, but very wide. It looks like it's well protected, insulated. I see a Christmas tree. I see Krista. She's back on the cans. Krista, what was that?
My little grunt. I accidentally...
My little grunt is another show that we're going to review. It's about ponies.
back to the pod. Boom. We are, I think, are technically on storyline number 4. And this one I'm going to sum up a little bit, not step by step, but we've got Rudy and Jorge.
They are brothers, and this is an interesting... They're brothers and they're boxers,
boxers,
and
man.
One of they were both being treated, one in the emergency room, and the other maybe a few floors down, because they were boxing each other, and we see their father in there as well. What is our first scene with these too.
Yep. Rudy's brought in. He's a 15-year-old. He has blunt force trauma from boxing to the head. Father comes in. They pull him out to get some information.
History.
I'm assuming health insurance information. And that's
he
really
does
it.
Talk. He's I was surprised to see that.
And we quickly go.
You should have seen the other guy, that type of stuff.
We quickly go, which is his brother, who's also being seen, just, I think, for some stitches in the mouth. But you know something's off at this point, and I wasn't sure what it was. I didn't know if it was, like, illegal boxing. They shouldn't have been. It's really in reference to an episode of Law & Order SVU. Which I'm sure you'll hear me talk about a lot, where there is like some underage boxing.
It's not uncommon for boxers to start fairly young. I think the issue was that there was a pretty significant skill difference between the two brothers. The older one was maybe not surprisingly much better boxer, or much more skilled, obviously experienced boxer. And the father encouraged them just to fight it out like a real fight. And it was not good for Rudy.
Yeah, especially because he has a pre-existing condition and he needs a procedure done in the brain or the head somewhere. But he should be fine. So, you know, they go through that, but then starts having some complications. Dr. Green is working on him. Long time character in ER. He is, if you've just seen promos of ER, he has glasses on. He's always in the front. He also has a daughter who he talks about a little bit while working on Rudy. But ultimately, Rudy's dying. And we have this scene where Green is so calm about this kid dying that I actually questioned.
See,
if
I
it was
had the
just
opposite
like
reaction.
Actor.
I thought,
Or I said, is he a fantastic
so good.
Actor?
Yeah, I think so. Can I say, we can get more to this during the Green story, but yeah, I thought that was maybe my favorite performance. Him and Benton, I just found so compelling. Every time they were on screen.
Yeah. Oh, my. Benton is phenomenal. And I'm actually a little upset that we didn't get to see him in
That's one of the things about this show is sometimes it teases out the things you want. And it's like, is he? Maybe we never get that in the series, but I imagine we do.
So ultimately, this just becomes a really emotional situation. They bring the brother and the father in to say goodbye. Jorge is upset with his dad. You know, they also find out Rudy had some stimulants and it actually raised the blood pressure, which caused a vessel to pop. Jorge freaks out on his dad. It's like, you know, like, this is your dream. It wasn't ours.
Yeah. He's like, this is your son.
Right through.
He's showing him the wound on his hand. Yeah. This is your legacy or something.
Yeah. He hurts his fist. He needs stitches, which I guess good thing you're already at the hospital. And what we find out here was that we find out that Rudy and Jorge's father was Cuban and he was a fighter there, a very good fighter. But when he wanted to leave, they broke both hands. And then at the end, this young doctor who looks very familiar, I don't think we get his name, young black doctor, I get the vibe he's a resident maybe. He comes in to give some sort of like end of life packet, decedent packet to the family. And he ultimately brings the father and son together. You know, he says some things and this was actually the hardest scene to watch was when the father said goodbye to his son and he died. That was really, really emotional for me. And I think it was like the pinnacle moment of sadness in this show.
When the young doctor was talking to the dad and he shared his backstory about, you know, he could have been a contender, but he suffered this injury. I think he asks him, have you ever told your son this? Because it may give you that sort of commonality.
Yeah.
I mean, it would help the son understand maybe why his dad's pushing him so hard, which is not to excuse it, but it would help the dad realize he can't capture this sort of glory through his son. It needs to be on his own terms. And you get the sense maybe he's not that into it or just so many things. And, of course, he pushed his son really hard. And, of course, they don't talk about any, like, legal consequences to this, although I kind of wonder what may be facing this father.
Yeah.
Although I like I said before, fighters do tend to start pretty young. I'm sure this was under, you know, probably a referee there. Yeah, it's not super common for
like the storyline.
Someone to die from a ring inflicted injury like right away, but it must happen. So this was a tough one. This was also the saddest storyline for me. Thank you for joining us. If you're joining us mid-episode, this is a fun podcast in which we tell lots of jokes.
Yeah, we have, really, this is like the last main storyline, I'll say. We have a woman who has hives. Have you ever had hives?
I have had hives.
Not fun.
Have you ever had hives?
No, but I definitely, no, I don't think so.
I am wearing a pink shirt, so I think I do look like a Benadryl, which would be really helpful for one who has hives. Yeah. So,
young couple, they come into the emergency room. They're on their honeymoon in Chicago.
Why?
They're from Syracuse, New York. I don't know why Chicago.
I love Chicago.
Chicago, beautiful city.
I don't know that I would honeymoon there.
Don't know if I'd honeymoon there either. I also don't think I would honeymoon in Syracuse, New York. That's where this couple is from. It sounds like they ended up road tripping there, which we'll come up in a little bit. But she just keeps having an allergic reaction. She keeps breaking out in hives. And they're like, can't figure out why. They've been to 3 different emergency rooms. They've done these tests. Can't figure it out.
Do you think this warrants an emergency?
Probably not. Yeah. But I guess maybe if you're not feeling well and you feel like you're going into like, what is it, like anaphylactic shock
or
something?
Like
if you think it's like heightening.
That's true.
So Carter, one of the other mainstays in ER.
Played by Noah Wiley, which is a name that I recognize.
Yeah, Dr. Carter.
I'm not really sure what I've seen.
He thinks she might be allergic to semen.
Which I had to look up.
Not S-E-A-M-E-N.
Yeah, we're not watching SpongeBob.
Yeah, so, no, because they just got married, so they are not using, like, latex condoms, which is, you know, what they originally thought maybe, you know, it was like an allergy to latex.
Well, she says that they're trying to conceive.
Oh, they are. I did forget that.
Yeah.
Also, Sam Yeager is the husband in the scene, who, if you've ever watched Parenthood, I want to say he was on Handmaid's Tale, maybe. Yes. I think. I don't know. He's in some show with Jennifer Goodwin. Like, not
he's a character actor. He's a character actor.
But you see him enough. Anyways, he plays the husband. Dr. Carter wants to test this theory out. And how is he going to test them out, David? He's going to have them have sex in an exam room. Which leads me to this kind of funny moment where he like brings them to an exam room door, ER exam room, boom, opens it up. There's a cadaver on the bed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That is wrapped up serial killer style in plastic. Not a sheet over it waiting to go to the morgue. Very weird for somebody who pays attention to those things. But nonetheless, what we find out is that they do have sex. Actually, another doctor is caught listening to them.
Yeah, she was also the most cynical about this theory.
Yes. There's clearly something going on with her and Carter. They have a lot of, like, they have back and forth throughout this whole episode.
Her and another doctor also had never heard about it. I would have thought, yeah, that makes, they didn't even really think it was, like, plausible.
Well, I think it's, like, kind of like a theory still at this point. Yeah.
Well, I mean, just the concept of an allergy that would come from another's any bodily fluids. But I think, I don't know, that seems like it would be a thing people have.
Yeah, I mean, if you can be allergic to, like, the sun or something.
Are people allergic to the sun?
Yeah, there's some people, if you, like, step out in the sun, you immediately, like, break out and start having an allergic reaction. You never heard of this?
Well, they're allergic to the light from the sun, the sun rays.
Yeah, which is sun.
No. Yeah, you know, I guess so. I don't know why that sounded very funny.
If you're allergic to the sun, please reach out to us for some bonus content. We'd like to interview you.
Sun exposure isn't great for anybody. But they have a specific allergy.
Your sunscreen.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I'm going to send them some literature on that. But so they do have sex. they unfortunately can't complete to test.
I'll say this is also an insane way to test this. I don't know why they couldn't just get a sample.
So weird.
You know, from him.
Yeah.
Tiny exposure amount to see, to maybe test like a patch of skin. Why would he?
Just like a normal. If he real, test.
Yes. Why? If he thinks that this is what's making her break out into extreme hives, or like hives that warrant a visit to the emergency room, why would he expose her to that possibility again? I don't know why. Is this brought up since they're on their honeymoon? Did he kind of figure, I don't want to like ruin their honeymoon by keeping them in a long time? Because
I don't know. I don't really know.
Is he
why.
An insane?
I think it was honestly
doctor?
Television value.
I think this,
which is actually what TV stands for, is television value.
Television value. I think that's right. I think that's right.
Guys, I'm on a different level tonight. Yeah, it was just a weird test. I think it was really just production value here. Anyways, they can't.
He's
they
a
can't
silly
do
goose.
It. So, well, they do it. They can do it, but they can't test it out.
Yeah.
So, you know, Carter says go home and just kind of figure it out. Well, they don't go.
Which
home.
You love to
they
hear
go to
from
the
a
camper
doctor.
Out back, they do it there, and it is successful. And she is indeed allergic to semen. So, basically, this storyline ends with Carter and Susan on the roof talking about it. Talking about how basically for her to get pregnant that they, you know, there's a good chance because he has, I guess, you know, very healthy semen and they can like artificially inseminate her and then continue to use, you know, condoms. So,
yeah.
Also on the roof, interesting, you know, I threw this in here. This is where they kind of start talking about, it's like this conversation mm-hmm. between Carter and Susan about weird places that they've had intercourse. Which includes, like, a Ferris wheel and probably one of my favorite moments
so
of the show,
funny.
Which is when Carter says, you know, I did it on a train to Seattle. But I was just by myself. And I thought that was really cute and endearing. It kind of took that scene and made me like it a
As far as inappropriate
more.
Workplace conversation goes, that was an endearing line. I'm sure the HR person at the hospital will love it.
Yeah. Also, they kiss here.
Mm-hmm.
And
he spills a cup of coffee off
maybe twice, like really quick kisses. Yes.
So they'll have to see whoever they dumped it on to fix their skin up.
I know. I always wonder about that. Yeah. He also says, hey, you don't have any allergies. I should worry about. Which I just actually like Dr. Carter brought so much humor to this episode in these moments.
Yeah,
and
a lot of
appreciated his style. It was cute. It was very cutesy and just like good humored. So last two storylines, super quick. I'm not gonna spend a lot of time on them. We've got Weaver and the firefighter.
Yeah, what are we
Dr. Weaver time? Had an instance where her life was saved recently by a female firefighter, Sandy Lopez. Firefighter comes back to get her hand checked, and Weaver ends up asking her out in probably the most awkward way on earth, which is, do you want to do something sometime?
I think that's pretty reasonable.
And she says yes. So,
well, I think
she says yes.
This is significant as a cultural artifact.
Yes. And I tried to look this up if she was like a trailblazing character.
I would guess maybe not.
I couldn't nail down but I did read, this is a little bit of a spoiler, which this whole episode is a spoiler. So I guess that Weaver doesn't really realize that she's gay until maybe a season or two before, but she doesn't start the show off.
I got the sense, this is 2001, this is Chicago, that it wasn't dangerous for her to talk about this, because she says, there's a great line, right? She says, unless I'm being way off base here, and then asks her out.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know that sort of, I'm not in these spaces, but I think there's even less of a risk right now that you maybe wouldn't hear that phrase, but at the time, I think there's less visibility around it. Right now you might just find out, you're like, oh, I met this nice person. Let me kind of see what their Spotify playlist is like. You know, maybe there's a lot of like Phoebe Bridgers or something like that. So I thought that was sweet, because I thought initially she was really reluctant to to be treated, or to, I think there were signs that were sort of coming out. There were vibes that were being ignored. So I was happy to see that she gets another chance to interact with her. I think they were really sweet. So that was our second to last storyline. Is that right?
Yeah. And the last one's really quick. It takes up not much of the episode, but it's Green and his daughter,
Rachel.
So,
did Rachel that clock Green, to yeah, you?
Also a character Friends. From Friends, I believe.
So, R.I.P. Matthew Perry, by the way.
Yes, yes, we are still in the wake of that. A very unfortunate, sad, young life lost too soon. Dr. Green is, you know, after the Rudy situation, his next patient is this young man who has fallen from a lamppost. His name is Andrew. This kid looks very familiar to me. I'm sure he's in something.
He's the really little
kid. Is he
kid,
the other
right?
actor you're... No, that kid was stuck in a toilet.
The kid who was stuck in the toilet... Angus T. Jones from 2 and a Half Men.
Oh.
That was the little, the son in that, whose name was Jake.
Interesting. I don't think I would have recognized
him. I immediately recognized him. And 2001, I don't know when they started doing 2 and a Half Men, probably maybe 2 years later. So
this kid comes in. His name's Andrew. The police are with him. Apparently, he was just arrested for stealing street signs. And Green's like, hey, like, I know you. Where do I know you from? You look familiar. Well, it's his daughter's friend. So he goes outside. She's sitting in the back of a cop car. And the cops are like, we usually take him down to the station to kind of scare him straight before calling you. But what happens is that doesn't happen. Rachel comes inside. There's definitely a tumultuous relationship between her and her father. Green asks her and says, hey, you know, is your friend Andrew doing any drugs? And she says, no. And then he pulls out a piece of paper and says, well, that's interesting, because his tox screen came back and he found marijuana.
Which is the worst drug that a kid can take.
Yeah, no comment. So this is bad. This is bad. So, you
is
know.
Is it objectively
her,
bad?
Are you? No. I mean, kids are kids, and I think that there's a lot worse things.
You know what I think is maybe worse than that is talking about someone else's talk screen that has no business knowing about it.
Yes, and she calls him out on that shit, and I loved it. She's like, isn't that confidential?
What was his answer to
he
that?
He asks her. I think he was like, kind of just twisted it into like something like, you know, like, the safety of my daughter
is
not
more
confidential
important.
Or Aces, something.
I'd rather have you angry at me than... I don't know, something.
Doing drugs.
I care more about you being safe than I do about you.
Which I love to hear as a parent, actually. I think that was a really great quote, but.
I don't. I think it's
her,
a false choice.
You know, are you doing drugs? What'd you say?
I think it's a false choice that you can't have both safety and security. I mean, security and trust.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the alternate is that, like, him not doing it would make her happy.
Yeah.
Like, I think, unfortunately, they go hand in hand there. But, like, I agree. I think, like, as a parent, you might have to do some things that piss your kids off to keep them safe. And, like, that's okay. Like, that's what I'm getting at. Do I think his other actions in this moment are...
Right. I mean,
like,
I got a little ahead of us. But, yeah, that's what happens is he drug tests her. Even though she says she doesn't do drugs.
Which also, in all fairness, like, she told... him that he wasn't, that, you know, Andrew was doing drugs.
But she might not have known.
Guys, listen, if you're young and you're listening to this podcast and your parents come to you and they have a question like that for you, I probably would just be honest because they probably already know the answer.
Expose the some differences between Krista and I. I lived in a pretty big town. I went to a big school. I don't think my parents knew who was on drugs and didn't.
But you don't think that, like, when your parents ask you a question, like, certain questions they just had the answers to and they wanted to know if you were lying to them?
I remember lots of instances. No, I don't remember an instance where my parents tried to set me up like that. I do remember an instance in which I was getting a haircut and my dad was reading a magazine and he asked me, have you ever heard of, like, Space Monkey or something? And I honestly said, I have no idea what that is. And he's like, okay, well, it says here kids are choking each other to try to get, like, a head rush. And I'm like, oh, I've heard of that. I've never heard of the Space Monkey.
I feel like for me, it was when I was way younger and it was like, oh, do you know how this ended up broken? And you're like, no. And you're like, well, your brother said that, you know, like that type of thing. I think I always knew the difference between like when I always knew with my parents, like when they knew something that they wanted to know if I was going to be honest about, and when they were doing the Space Monkey and was like, hey, have you ever heard of this thing? And I'd be like, no. Like, I definitely think it was like a younger situation. And to me, I only say that with Rachel because she knew that her dad she should have known her dad knew the answer to that question. And to me, in those situations, it's better to just be honest, whether your parents aren't going to like to hear it or not. I mean, guess what? Her tox screen came
negative.
Back. Negative. And what we learned here is marijuana is the devil's lettuce.
So, okay, I have an observation about this. And although this is the first episode I've consciously seen, I mentioned earlier I've seen little clips of it, I do remember this must have been a later season, but I remember a few things. One, I remember an episode in which Rachel brings home ecstasy, which was what there was a drug that used to be called ecstasy, into her home. I think she's babysitting and a baby gets into her backpack and takes it. And that's the ER story. Do you remember this?
No, but I read about it because it's actually, I want to say it's Green's, their other kid.
Oh, their other kid.
That he has with Elizabeth. Cordry? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So his partner, but, okay, that's right.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's the whole story. That's ER season 8, episode 9, season 9, episode 8. Season 8, episode 9. Yeah, so tell me some general thoughts of this episode, David.
General thoughts? I thought this was really compelling television. I thought the performances were so good. Even the minor characters, his lawyer was great. That's an actress who's been in quite a few things. I might even have her name written down somewhere. But yeah, the different storylines were good. I don't know that I expected that much switching around. I'll say the way it was filmed was very good. I kind of got like Robert Altman vibes, the way the camera would just sort of follow around a room, also follow some characters, but then go to others. There was like some overlapping dialogue and things like that that actually gave me the vibe of the movie MASH, which was a Robert Altman movie. That's sort of one of his stylistic trademarks. But I thought this was good. I thought this was really good. I thought it aged well. I mean, I know there were some maybe silly things in there, but this didn't really seem dated. Some things we watched, it's very apparent when they took place, and which is fine. That's often fine. But I thought as far as going into it, I mentioned the sort of cultural artifact. That was pretty understated compared to what I thought it might be, which, you know, so that could sometimes make this a challenging endeavor, this podcast. But this was pretty straightforward. I thought it was a good show, and I'd be interested in watching some more of it.
I agree. I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. I liked it. I really enjoyed it. It went by super quick. I think, like I said, I feel like I've watched it before, right? Like, it was very easy for me to catch on, and just, like, mm-hmm. everyone felt... I felt very nostalgic watching it. I have watched other medical dramas, and I know I'm going to get some hate probably for this, but I'm going to go here, and obviously I'd love to watch some of these other shows on the pod.
Where are you going?
We're open to a lot of these, but like, you know, ER is the second
Grey's Anatomy
longest running medical drama after Grey's Anatomy, which I watched, I don't know, probably like the first six or seven seasons of Grey's Anatomy, and I liked it. And then I just stopped watching it because I was in college and, like, you know, whatever, not a big deal. Just no real reason. And I remember I ended up watching an episode from, like, 3 or 4 seasons later, and the acting was so bad. And I was like, I can't remember. So, like, to me, I have no interest in going back and watching, like, all of Grey's. And I think if we ever did Grey's, I'd actually want to do, like, a 2-part episode where we do a earlier episode and a later episode. I've watched some of New Amsterdam. I did not finish it, but like out of all the medical dramas, like, I think I'd be most interested in watching ER or poking around a little bit just to see what's going on. But also, like, let us know what your favorite one is. You know, what's your favorite medical drama? Have you seen more? If you're younger, what's your recollection of ER? I mean, we came from a time where this was huge, but we saw ER and Grey's Anatomy. Like, that dominated our time frame. I'm just curious, as somebody who's maybe, you know, 18, who is 19 watching Grey's Anatomy, like, do you even really know that ER was, like, as big as it was? So I'm just curious about that. But the only other thing I wanted to share is I did look up just, you know, the character list when I was afterwards. I was just trying to get, like, oriented a little bit of, like, who people were. And some big names who've made some guest appearances in this show. And I don't know if it's as a doctor, if it's one episode, if it's 10. But obviously we know about George Clooney. I'm going to just share some other names.
Yeah, I think he was part of the main cast. Yeah.
Mariska Hargitay.
Oh, really? Okay.
Was in this. Not sure how long. John Stamos. Linda Cardellini.
Wow.
We actually, maybe next episode, love Freaks and Geeks, a Linda Cardellini show, because I love her. Kat Dennings was in it.
Oh, yeah. Also in Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah. Sally.
No. I'm wrong about that. Kat Dennings was in Two Broke Girls, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, I was thinking of Kaplan. What's her name? You know who I'm talking
Lizzie?
About. Lizzie Kaplan, yeah.
I just
who was also in, I'm
her.
Sorry, Kaplan was also in that miniseries on Hulu, Fleischman's in Trouble, in which the main protagonist, the Jesse Eisenberg character in that is a doctor who has children. So that kind of made me think of that.
Interesting. And then Sally Field was in it. William H. Macy.
Mm-hmm.
And Stanley Tucci.
Loved them both. Yeah, Stanley Tucci. Okay. Yeah, he's great.
A lot of people. And I don't know when, who, where, when, what, why, how they popped in, but, like, it was cool. So I don't know. I think something, David, we're going to do on this pod is we're going to do a little heat thermometer at the end of every episode. And I think both of us should just say what we think where this show is on a heat thermometer from 1 to 100. 100 being, like, best show ever, best episode ever. 0 obviously being terrible. I think we're going to be putting some of these reviews up, and we're going to want our listeners to guess who they think the heat thermometer value goes to. So look on Instagram for that in the future episodes, or, you know, for the future. So, David, what's your heat thermometer for ER?
For this episode?
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to say...
Ready? 3, 2, 1...
83.
I'm gonna go really high. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it, too. I might move mine a little closer to that. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I have no real issues with the show. Yeah, I thought it was great.
I think this might be something that I have on in the background a little bit over the next few weeks. You know, so
yeah.
Anyways, thank you so much for staying till the end. We hope you enjoyed our first episode. Definitely a little bit longer than we are going to try and have. I know there's some stuff we're going to be cutting. So right now it's definitely a little bit longer. But, you know, we're going to switch in between shows that are 40, traditionally 42-ish minutes to, you know, 22 minutes. And just thank you so much for listening and showing your support. And like I said, make sure to give us a follow on Instagram at Mids Podcast, and feel free to send any notes in to our midspodcast@gmail.com. Apparently I can't say email addresses. And also make sure to leave us a review and give us a 5-star rating. You know, we would really appreciate that. So
what platform should people review us on?
I believe we're on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
I think that's the best one to review us on.
You can get podcasts. So thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you soon.
See you soon.
Bye
everybody. All right, how did you feel about that?